Hello, welcome to the Gratuitous Pausing Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Greyhawk.
And I'm your co-host, Jackson Eflin.
This is episode 6 of our Disney bracket. This week we'll be going over the well-received Disney classics, Beauty and the Beast and Mulan.
In Beauty and the Beast, Belle's quiet life of reading and judging her provincial French neighbors is interrupted when the boorish Gaston tries to woo her. She says no, he tells her they're getting married anyway, she says no. Her dad has gotten lost in the woods. His horse runs home and leads Belle to him in a spooky castle, where she finds her dad has been imprisoned by a beast. Belle offers to take his place in the dungeon. The beast is at first a shitty host, but the servants, cursed to be furniture, help him be less of a jerk. After he saves Belle from a wolf attack, Belle helps him get home and tends his wounds. They start to fall in love. Meanwhile, Gaston schemes to imprison Belle's dad. Learning via magic mirror that her dad is in trouble, the beast tells Belle to go, even though this may mean he is cursed forever. In convincing the town not to lock up her dad, Belle reveals the beast. Gaston riles the townsfolk up against him, and while they fight the furniture, he goes to kill the beast. The beast lets him, until Gaston makes it clear that he thinks of Belle as a possession. They fight, Gaston falls to his death, Belle confesses her love, the curse is broken, and they live happily ever after.
Meanwhile, Fa Mulan is the only child of the Fa family. Clumsy, doesn't fit into her community, making it hard to find a husband. Meanwhile, Shan Yu and the Huns have invaded China and are pillaging villages on the way to the palace. The emperor institutes a draft requiring a man of every family to enlist. When the draft board comes to Mulan's village and compels her father to re-enlist, she protests. Mulan and her father argue at dinner that evening. Mulan storms off, deciding to steal her father's armor and enlist in his stead. Mulan's ancestors are upset and convene to ask Mushu, a demoted guardian, to awaken the great stone dragon to bring Mulan home. Mushu destroys the dragon statue and takes on the responsibility himself. Mushu attempts to help Mulan pass his mail, but it does not go well. However, after one of Disney's best musical numbers, Mulan earns the respect of the other soldiers and her commanding officer Shang. The unit battles the Huns in a mountain pass while trying to get to the Imperial City. Mulan fires a rocket and sets off an avalanche, burying the Huns and barely saving Shang. Afterwards, Mulan passes out from an arrow wound, and a medic discovers her secret. The rest of the unit abandons her in the mountains, where she discovers that Shan Yu and a few of the Huns survived. Mulan rushes to the Imperial City to warn them, but no one believes her, until the Huns ambush the Emperor and take him hostage in the palace. Mulan convinces her unit to adopt her plan, they infiltrate the palace, save the Emperor, and defeat Shan Yu. The entire city, including the Emperor, bow to her in gratitude. She returns home and makes up with her father. Mushu is also reinstated as a full guardian.
So I think this is the hardest decision we've had. We usually know, we kind of talk a little bit about it. This time we haven't been able to make a decision.
Yeah, we kind of stewed a few days after watching the films before recording. And we both decided to go in after we had tentatively made our decisions, but not told each other what those decisions are. So we'll have to see at the end of the episode whether we agree or disagree.
Normally we go through the movies one than the other. This time I want to try something a little different. I want to try comparing different factors and seeing what we feel is stronger.
With how close the movies are in age, they both kind of deal with some feminist themes and are both considered some of the best that the Disney Renaissance has to offer. I think that's probably going to be a much more interesting way to analyze.
Let's start with the most important question for any Disney film. What's the better horse?
There's a lot of horses in the Disney canon. Here we have Philippe from Beauty and the Beast, who is a tan Clydesdale-esque horse. And then we have Khan in Mulan, who is very angular and has a very thin snout compared to most other Disney horses.
I'm going to give my vote for this one to Khan, if only because he survived an avalanche. That's top-tier horsing to me.
I mean, Khan is pretty badass, whereas Philippe kind of runs away from the wolves and on occasion abandons his owners in the forest. Khan is almost always by Mulan's side throughout the entire film, with the only exception being the assault on the Imperial Palace.
And it's kind of hard to get a horse to climb a column and drag.
They don't have thumbs.
Yeah, poor things. So next question, let's talk about the music. My personal feeling is that Beauty and the Beast has better music, even if the individual songs from Mulan are better.
I don't know. I think at that point we're really splitting hairs. I do think that the music in Beauty and the Beast is much more evocative, and I think it flows with the narrative much better. However, the musical numbers in Mulan, while they do sometimes bring you out of the story a little bit. They are overall much catchier and I think are a lot easier to sing along to.
See, I agree with you for a lot of that stuff, but there's Belle, there's the Tales All This Time, there's Be Our Guest that I think are also really catchy. I'm biased. Whenever I go out the front door to the donut shop, I just immediately break into Little Town. It's a quiet village. I can't stop myself. Hopefully none of the neighbors ever hear me calling them, provincial.
I mean, I could also counter that with the fact that it took quite a lot of restraint not to start this episode with, let's get down to business to debate for fun.
Yeah, Make a Man Out of You is one of the best Disney songs.
And yeah, there's definitely some problematic nature to the whole Make a Man Out of You. I firmly understand and agree with that statement. However, it's a goddamn catchy song.
Yeah, it's catchy, and especially when it gets reprised towards the end during the cross-dressing scene, is a really good way of complicating what being a man means. And I think that is a good use of your reprise, and I love a good reprise.
Mm-hmm. Overall, I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. I think that they are different. They have different strengths and weaknesses, but overall, they serve their respective films very well.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about the horses and the music. The obvious place to go is the protagonist. So let's go with the antagonists.
Yeah. So Gaston and Shan Yu are great villains in almost opposite ways. Shan Yu is incredibly sinister, I believe him as a threat, I'm terrified of him. Whereas Gaston is almost a parody of an idea, and I don't think he's quite as threatening on a scale sense, but in terms of his impact on Belle and what he represents, I think he's just as effective. Shan Yu isn't a personal antagonist for Mulan. He's there, he's causing a problem, but Shan Yu doesn't care about Mulan till the end, whereas Gaston and Belle are intimately connected. Their relationship, for lack of better terminology, defines a lot of the film and how the story goes. And so I think on that level, Gaston is a more integral antagonist.
Gaston is really well used in Beauty and the Beast as an antagonist. He is the antithesis of Belle in almost every way. He is misogynistic, chauvinistic, revels in his ignorance. His position in the community is, again, the exact opposite of Belle, whereas he is beloved in this community and well-respected. Belle is kind of seen as this oddity, and everyone wonders why she just doesn't get up with the program, with the exception of the bookshop owner.
Mm.
Mulan has two antagonists. There's the obvious one in Shan Yu, who is wickedly smart. He brings this dark and sadistic nature to the film, and I think that works really well with portraying how awful war is. I give the movie a lot of credit for not being very pro-war in how it portrays the events of the film. However, there's also the bureaucrat, Chi Fu, who very much acts as an antagonist throughout the film. At the beginning of the film, when he's speaking with the emperor, he disagrees with him, where the emperor corrects him and says, no, a single grain of rice can tip the scale. He butts heads with Mulan and her father when handing out the draft notices, and specifically tells Mulan that she should know her place. He then again acts as an antagonist against Shang, preventing him from getting his unit ready and going off to fight the Huns. And even at the climax of the film, when Mulan has proven herself to everyone, still stands against her when the emperor attempts to give her a administrative position at the palace.
Okay, you can have his job.
And in that respect, it's really interesting to have these two antagonists throughout the film that are very much foils of one another. Shan Yu is very masculine, strong, very sure of himself, whereas Chi Fu is very foppish. He is a crony. He wields power by proxy, as opposed to the way that Shan Yu wields power that he himself has earned. I think they both excel in both of their roles, but it is kind of hard to compare Mulan versus Beauty and the Beast because one has a solo antagonist where the other has this dichotomy.
Gaston has Le Fou, although I think you can hardly think of Le Fou as an antagonist on the same level as Chi Fu. like you're saying, these two different antagonistic forces, whereas LeFou is Gaston's sidekick. He is functionally Maleficent's Raven or Ursula's Eels.
In many ways, I would compare LeFou to a Sean Hughes Falcon.
Yeah, only the Falcon is scary and intimidating.
Exactly.
And with LeFou and Gaston to a certain extent, there's the queer coding that people are still debating about whether it was an intentional thing, and if so, how much, and then that got complicated with live action. And I don't know if the queer coding of their relationship, but especially of LeFou, helps as a thing. I think while Gaston is a better hashtag Disney villain, Mulan uses its antagonist better.
I would agree with that.
So, Belle and Mulan.
The somewhat titular characters of their respective films?
Yeah. Her name means beauty, so close enough.
Yeah, and she is, in fact, the beauty of which they speak.
Mm-hmm. So, before we get too much into this, the interactions between Mulan and feminism are complicated by the legend of Mulan in Chinese culture and history, and while that's not necessarily something we're going to be equipped to fully talk about, I will say that I was going to go into this analyzing it from a feminist lens, but my friend Daniel Na, who runs the Audie Morse podcast, which you can find at audiemorse.podbean.com, clued me into some things about how Mulan works as a sort of standard American feminist character, but when you look at the separation between what we see in the film versus her place in culture and legend, it's a little bit fuzzier.
And that's kind of to be expected. The entire endeavor of making Mulan was very appropriative and adapted a lot from Chinese culture and various other Asian cultures, which complicates matters more. You can read Mulan through a feminist lens, but if you are doing so, it is going to be a very white feminist lens as opposed to a intersectional feminist lens.
So it's probably better to analyze them more as characters than as feminist tentpoles.
Yes.
I think about this before, and I don't have a strong opinion about which I think is a stronger character.
I'm not sure who I would say is a stronger character. I think they both have some very good pros and some cons. I do, however, think Mulan is a much more dynamic character than Belle is. Mulan ends up in a very different place at the end of her film than she was at the beginning. Mulan is clumsy, doesn't quite fit in with her community, like I said in my synopsis, but she finds herself when she goes off to war. The training instills within her some
gumption,
discipline that some people definitely find within the armed forces, and improves her self-understanding and her relationship with her family quite a bit, and it doesn't all hinge on a love interest character. Whereas most of Belle's transformation, in fact, does.
I will say that as a relatable metaphor, I feel like Belle works a bit better, at least to me, because she's someone who's in a shitty situation that she doesn't really have a way of getting out of, and she manages to find her way out by being true to herself and not backing down from what she believes in. And I think that while Mulan definitely changes more, Belle's refusal to change under various stressors is another form of strong characterization.
Yeah, I will not deny that Belle's a strong character. I know for me personally, I definitely have a bias in preference towards dynamic characters as opposed to static characters. That doesn't mean static characters are bad, but when push comes to shove and you put one of each in front of me, I will probably more identify with the dynamic character.
We mentioned love interest. Should we get into that?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to move on to next.
So I know definitely what I pick for this one. Shang has a great arc. Shang is beautiful. Shang is a strong bisexual, but I'm going to have to give it to the Beast all the way. The Beast has the best arc in these movies, and his design is phenomenal.
The Beast is what happens if a Minotaur got bit by a werewolf.
Mm. It's really cool how they managed to bring in all these different animals. You get wolf and bear and gorilla and boar. It doesn't feel like just any one of them, but it still feels like a real animal that should exist in the world. Well, you know, should. I'd be horrified if this was running around France. It would be like the Beast of Gévaudan all over again. But this feels like it fits into Earth biology.
The chimeric aspects of Beast's character design do a really great job of personifying this character. And as you go through the film and Beast becomes more open to other people, kind of deals with some of his pent-up aggression and trauma, those features soften to the point where he pseudo-dies in Belle's arms. You can almost see the human face just beneath the animal features.
And also because his form is kind of fluid, they can give him a lot more range of expression without breaking from an established character model, and that allows him to emote a lot more. It helps that he has these very human eyes, but his pronounced eyebrows and jaw allows him to have a lot of hyper-realized expressions.
We should probably talk about Shang a little bit. I know you love Beast, but Shang is also incredibly awesome.
He is. I think it was a great choice to have this person who's very bold, hero to his men in public, but in private he's very excited at the chance of promotion, at the ability to serve his country. That's a cool dynamic of the public and interior lives.
Also, the change that you see in the character after he discovers his father's death at the hands of the Huns is well acted. The change in his demeanor is rather subtle. He becomes a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more snappy, and in general is much more determined to stop the Huns than he was.
The secondary characters in these films are also pretty great. I like that with both of them you have essentially those three guys for the setting. You've got Cogsworth, Lumiere, and Mrs. Potts, and Chip. And then you have Yao Ling and Jin Po.
Giving us the side characters in Beauty and the Beast is really great. It gives us an outside perspective of how they are viewing the evolution of Belle and Beast's relationship. It also gives each of those characters confidence to talk about the evolution of the relationship without having to talk to the object of their affections. Object's probably a bad word there, but
subject.
Subject, there we go. With the subject of their affections.
And they're all pretty memorable and pretty likable. I mean, I'll admit that the comedy duo of Cogsworth and Lumiere is pretty iconic, but Yao and Ling are also a pretty good duo, and then Jin Po has my whole heart.
Having Yao, Ling, and Jin Po all there with their very distinct personalities and all having very different approaches to masculinity is also really great, especially during those early scenes with Mulan in the camp, kind of struggling to fit in. And their growth of friendship through the Make a Man Out of You montage is great, going from playing these mean tricks on Mulan to them coming together as a unit and strengthening each other and helping each other. I think we've done a really good job of dissecting all of the characters. We should probably talk about
Mushu.
We could talk about Mushu.
Weirdly, I kind of forgot he was a thing until I was writing out the characters. I feel like Eddie Murphy and Mushu were not a harmonious alignment of the stars.
I'm kind of two minds about Mushu. I enjoy the comedy aspects that Mushu brings on some occasions. I love that Mushu refuses to acknowledge Khan as a horse. And even narratively, the parallels that Mushu has with Mulan's journey of redemption and self-discovery are interesting. However, due to the nature of Mushu trying to remain secret from everyone else, he gets pushed out of much of the narrative, and he probably could have been written out entirely.
He does have that thing that you are super into about displacing a character's interior blah 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 onto an exterior blah blah blah, but I don't think he worked as well for that because Mulan has other people to talk to, and Mushu is usually leading the scene that he's in because you don't want to keep Eddie Murphy from talking. That's a waste of your Eddie Murphy.
I think part of this was they saw how well Robin Williams did with his role as Genie in Aladdin, and they decided that Mulan needed that sort of thing as well. I'm not going to say it doesn't work here, but I will say it pales in comparison to Genie in Aladdin. Let's go ahead and move on to artistry and themes. Let's go ahead and talk about Beauty and the Beast first.
Well, Beauty and the Beast can be kind of touch and go with some of the animations. Like, there are some places where they definitely copy and paste the animation. There are some truly staggering visuals, like the castle and all those gargoyles that you see are different models they had for the beast before they settled on what they went with.
Oh, that's a neat fact.
Yeah. Then there's the standout ballroom scene where you have these amazing sweeping shots with this perfect use of CGI and these beautiful expressions.
The stained glass intro is gorgeous. They're able to replicate the texture of some of that colored glass, and they are able to simplify the shapes to where you could see this as being actually constructed. Some of the extras in town are kind of lazily done. Some of them are so caricatured that they look like aliens.
They spent their money where they needed to, but yeah, you move towards better animation the further you get from town.
The other standout feature that I want to comment on is Beauty and the Beast's focus on facial animation, especially with the eyes. If it weren't for those subtle animations that are able to evoke such strong emotion with so many of the characters, I don't think the narrative would work nearly as well as it does. Especially since they are working with Beast and Belle, who are very, very different, but they are both able to evoke almost effortlessly on film.
Also, Belle has a nose.
Yes. Belle is a Disney princess that gets to have a fucking nose. One other thing I do want to comment on. Some of the male physiques in this film are very Michelangelo-esque. There are some hulking dudes in this movie. There are some scenes with Gaston and the Beast where they are built like a barn, and it's a little too much. And I specifically say Michelangelo due to the paintings on the ceiling that we get during the ballroom scene that are, again, very Michelangelo-esque. The magical effects on the mirror and the rose are very different. One is very active and bold, the other is much more subtle, and they both work really well to make you feel that these things are otherworldly. In addition to the facial animations, Beast also has great body language. They give them this huge hulking form, and they use it really, really well to tell you visually how he is feeling, what his thoughts are, what his emotions are.
Should we get into Mulan a bit?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into the visuals of Mulan.
Especially the visuals of Hercules.
Yeah, that's fair. There's a lot of similarities here with Hercules. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing. I really like Hercules. And while the visuals in Mulan are a little bit more simplified in comparison to Beauty and the Beast, they work well for the story that they're telling.
They get that flowing, rolling avalanche in that uses those spirals really well. I think it's a really cool motif.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the smoke and fire and snow and ash in this film all share this very Asiatic visual motif of billowing clouds and forms, and it works well.
I don't know if it's an intentional thing, but in the original Ballad of Mulan, a lot of the storytelling is done by talking about what nature is doing around the characters, especially Mulan. And if that was intentional homage, they did a good job translating that storytelling mode to the visual mode of animation.
Another place where Mulan excels is the sword choreography and the fight scenes. While probably not up to the same level as, say, Avatar The Last Airbender, you can very much tell that they had some masterful martial artists in and used them heavily for reference.
And the way that people's motions are very fluid works well with how the environment's motions are very fluid.
I do have to ding Mulan visually. The character Kriki only has four limbs. My brother's an entomologist, and he will be upset if I don't point it out.
Speaking of dinging Mulan, Shang doesn't cross-dress in that final scene, which make it gayer, you cowards.
I do love bearded Zhao cross-dressing.
Giving us perhaps the best line in this or any Disney movie.
Concubines. Ugly concubines.
Let's go ahead and go into themes for Bee and the Bee.
So I think the obvious theme here is realizing your assumptions were wrong. That's kind of the point of the original story, so they nailed that. Although, interestingly, Belle doesn't change all that much apart from, I guess, being able to see what was deeply buried under there, where the Beast realizes that, oh no, I am the jerk here. I'm monstrous outside and inside. I should fix that.
because I live in America and it's 2018, it's hard to divorce some of the parallels I see here with some of the parallels that are going on with our nation politically. We have a very charismatic, misogynist, anti-intellectual blowhard who is using xenophobic rhetoric in order to use the naive populace to get what he wants. And I'm not gonna lie, it's a little hard to watch the Kill the Beast lead up because of that. It's a little too real.
And Howard Ashman, who wrote a lot of the music for this, was a queer man dying of AIDS and didn't actually live to see the final film. Given the general stigma that a lot of queer people, especially queer men, were getting because of the AIDS epidemic, you can see a lot of subconscious influence from that on that crowd song.
One thing I do want to hit on for Beauty and the Beast is there's a lot of mentions of the time frame that Beast has to break the curse and how long that they've been cursed for and what sort of time period in France this is taking place in. There's a lot of inconsistencies and odd choices that, while individually small, build upon each other, and it came to a point where it was kind of just too difficult to ignore the fact that this film doesn't really have any sense of time or scale.
I'll admit part of that is because we watched the version that brings back When We're Human Again, which was cut from the original film because they realized that it created a lot of timeline problems.
It's also not a very good song.
It's not a very good song. The extended edition is not always the better edition. It doesn't really bother me, but I'll acknowledge the world building is a little bit fuzzy.
There's also just the inconsistencies with how far away the castle is from the town. Whereas Maurice is traveling for hours originally to get to the fair that he's going to and kind of stumbles across it. Then it takes Belle another few hours to find it after she figures out something's wrong with Maurice when Philippe comes back. And then Maurice gets lost trying to find the castle again to try and rescue Belle. But when we hit the climax of the film and the townsfolk are singing Kill the Beast, they're able to walk to the castle in what seems like just a few minutes. And it's things like that. After doing a little bit of research after the film, I was able to, at least to my satisfactory level, place this as very soon after the French Revolution.
Meaning that Beast probably survived the whole beheading craze because he was a beast at the time and no one went near there. And because the townsfolk no longer have any need for the monarchy, they would have just ignored him.
Yeah, that's the best explanation I have. So let's talk about the themes in Mulan. It's not subtle about them. It wears its themes right on its sleeves.
Yeah.
I'm sure many of you are familiar with the drinking game from Mulan that is just take a shot every time someone says honor.
Or if you were ever near anyone who was in musical theater for the last 20 years, you've heard someone sing Reflection.
I do think it handles those themes okay. I know that as someone from a Western imperial perspective, I'm probably not the best person to judge the nuances of honor and Confucian ideals going on here, but I do like the self-discovery themes in Mulan.
Internally to the film, the themes work, but externally, it's very Western gaze. While the film does the themes well, it maybe shouldn't have done them because it changes the point of the story. According to my research, glasses push, the idea of a woman warrior wouldn't be as ridiculous at the time. There are a number of women warriors in around the time period the story was written, and there's an adaptation from the 1600s where Mulan gets to the army and she makes friends with her commanding officer, who's also a woman. So while I'm all for girl power narratives, I think that this could have been handled better on that front.
There's also some issues with this film and its portrayal of toxic masculinity. This film knows toxic masculinity exists, but I don't think it does quite enough to critique it and offer alternatives. I'm not saying that the film necessarily has to do that, but I do think it's a little irresponsible to say, hey, look at this thing, and not really engage with it and try to fix it all that much.
I think it's trying to offer this idea that a synthesis between hyperfemininity and hypermasculinity are what you need, which as a genderqueer person, I'm all for. But I think it falls short because we don't really see what becomes of the hypermasculine characters after the story's over. We don't really see if Yao and Ling and Chin Po get better about this. We get a bit of it with Shang, but he's already kind of a goober. Like, I'm sorry, but Shang's a goober.
I love that about Shang.
So pure.
Also, like, Chi Fu, he doesn't quite end up getting his comeuppance because Mulan does not take the advisor position. I know that there's a sequel, but I'm not sure what becomes of him. And again, we're trying to avoid talking about sequels here.
There is a Twitter thread I saw about why it's a better movie, so I'm actually really curious now because I haven't seen it.
There's also some of the shitty things that Mulan's father pulls that I don't necessarily think that he entirely makes up for. So there's also that.
Which I get a lot of characters to work through.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked these movies to death. I think it's time to make a decision.
Okay, so my choice for what I think should move on is Beauty and the Beast. Where are you coming from?
I also choose Beauty and the Beast.
Huh, okay, thank God.
We have yet to implement our emergency no consensus rules.
Which is we put the two DVDs in a field and then whichever the goat eats first, we let the other one go ahead. So while I think these are both strong films that are definitely watchable, they're a pretty good double feature. There's just a few things about Beauty and the Beast that push it a little further.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit a part of my bias comes from doing research into Howard Ashman. I posted about that on our Facebook page. And
for me, the research portion definitely kind of pushed where I made my final decision. I have some stuff up on the Facebook page about Mulan coming from Asian perspectives who are probably better equipped to deal with that. But there's also just the fact that while this movie is adapting a Chinese poem, there's a lot of Pan-Asian influences in here. A lot of the voice actors are of Japanese or Korean descent as opposed to Chinese, and those sort of subtle racial issues do lower Mulan enough for Beauty and the Beast to kind of just push ahead. I don't think they are quite enough to detract from the enjoyment of watching the film, but that's kind of where I'm at.
So, we have a decision. Cool. What's up next week?
We're going back to deal with some older Disney fare. We have Sleeping Beauty versus Fox and the Hound.
Cool.
This has been the Gratuitous Pausing Podcast. We hope to see you later.